Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Hey, Jay, where are you at?
Talk Shoe. I am actually standing in my driveway. It is a blissfully warm, balmy day. It was actually up in the 80s for the first time since probably last September. And so I am celebrating with a cocktail in the great outdoors.
That is fantastic. And we were just so thrilled that this evening we seem to have gotten a cold front. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just heard a big burst of static. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
We've got a cold front coming through in May, of all things, and it's actually dipping into the 70s here in our house.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so we are experiencing pleasant weather kind of from opposite directions.
Yeah. That's sort of synchronicitous stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just thinking about a number of different things. I was wondering if, do you know if carbonated water is bad for kids?
I have no idea.
Do you think it could be?
I think it's possible, certainly.
It seems pretty harmful.
It produces gas, you know, and kids aren't quite as good at, dealing with gas as we adults are.
Yeah, there is gas. But, I mean, isn't that more or less immediate? It's not really long term.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'd be surprised if there were much in the way of long term problems associated with this. But then, you know.
I mean, just, like even later, drinking a bunch of seltzer water or whatever, you either burp it up right away. It's not going to really bother you a few hours later.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, I've just noticed that, you know, we have a little water carbonator, and we carbonate water all the time and drink it. And Persephone is fascinated by it.
Of course, yeah.
When I pour a little glass of fizzy water, it's just amazing to her, and she loves to have sips of it. And every time she takes a sip, she gets this look on her face like, oh, my God, what is that? It's just insane. and it's almost like she's getting drunk. It was kind of weird, but it does seem almost intoxicating. And that got me, I started to feel like, my God, this is like crack or something. She's getting hooked on this, but it's just water with carbon dioxide.
Oh, yeah.
How bad could it be?
Well, kids have their own form of crack. I mean, it's worth keeping in mind that, you know, kids who have not experienced things like refined sugar, for example, when they do come into contact with that stuff, it's, the effects are immediate and dramatic. Whereas we adults, we learn to sort of smooth over the edges of those, the effects of those relatively benign substances, and it's so you know that's why we turn to real crack or LSD or whatever. What's that?
I was at Dookie Chase's a few days ago, and are you hearing that loud staticky bursting?
Every once in a while, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying. I was at Dookie Chase's a few days ago, and they served a lemonade that was so sugary that I was starting to feel giddy and kind of sick.
Wow.
Yeah, that refined sugar is bad news.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad news. But the main thing
alcohol,
that I
on the other hand.
To ask, yes, I'm having a nightcap. What about you?
Me too, yeah. I've even changed things up this evening because, this is the first time that we've been able to have a conversation where I've been in the great outdoors. I can even take a walk, come to think of it, because, I have a cell phone.
Yes, you do. And I heard the clink of ice there, so you're enjoying a cocktail of some sort. What might you be drinking?
A White Russian, actually.
Wow.
of all things, a Caucasian, as one of my heroes would call it.
Yeah, that is awesome. I, of course, am having some cognac.
Yeah, of course, yeah, because you're French.
Yeah, so what I wanted to ask you was, I don't suppose you happened to see that link about the Zamboni.
No, I didn't. I was wondering why you texted me the word Zamboni this morning.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you feel like is the best way of sharing links, but one way that I do it is I use Delicious. You know, it's Delicious.
Hmm?
The website. It's
yeah, I've heard of it. I've never really indulged myself in its obsessions and whatever it is.
It's just a way of saving links and sharing links.
Okay.
Other people. And you can tie it into Facebook. So when I save a link on Delicious, it shows up on my Facebook profile and so forth. So you could have seen it there, for example. But, you know, I just think it's kind of a cool way to bookmark things and remember websites for later. And then it kind of lets you let other people see that you showed an interest in some particular website or whatever. So,
right, okay.
Yeah, anyway, the point is that I only mention that because you might have seen that I saved a link to a site called Zamboni.
Oh, okay.
You might wonder, well, what is this Zamboni? Of course, we all know what a Zamboni is, but
right.
But this is just a web. It's just a blog, and he named it Zamboni for some reason, like the author.
Mm-hmm.
And all it
because
really
it's
is,
a good word. I mean, we should acknowledge that Zamboni is a very fine word.
It is a good word. It's a fun word to say. I think
yeah.
everybody would acknowledge that. And a word
yeah,
we don't
I,
have
I,
probably,
I would.
Yes, a word we probably don't have cause to say often enough. But
right.
this blog, I just have to emphasize the simplicity of what it is. It's essentially just a list of like, I guess, albums that should be in the library of any modern hipster.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long list of really cool albums, music albums.
Okay.
Of all different sorts. Only in addition to just listing the albums, he's actually posted the full albums, the audio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it just goes on and on. And he's been doing this for years, for like 3 years or so. And you can just go
mm-hmm.
back to the archives. And I mean, it's just seemingly endless. And for
wow.
each. So for example, you've probably heard of Kraftwerk, right? The German electronic
Who?
Band.
Oh, yes.
Kraftwerk,
yeah.
The seminal German electronic music ensemble.
Yeah.
Well, did you know, I believe, if I've got this correct, that their first albums have never been released on in CDs, in digital form. They've never been.
Oh, wow.
They were just vinyl released. So those aren't
mm-hmm.
really available. Except that, of course, some people out there somewhere have ripped them from vinyl to MP3 format and
yeah.
shared them a lot in various different ways, you know, BitTorrent and stuff like that. So this
mm-hmm.
guy has basically just, you know, he just collects things. He doesn't rip them himself. He just gets them somehow and then posts them. And he doesn't
mm-hmm.
write the reviews himself. He just copies a review of the album from some other website and
uh-huh.
pastes it in there and the album artwork and so forth. Well, this is just amazing stuff. I mean, if you go through, obviously with the Kraftwerk one, it's not such a good example in terms of the ethical, but maybe it is in terms of the ethical gray area because of the fact that you can't go to the iTunes store or Amazon.com or whatever and buy that music. It's just not available. But then there's other
yeah.
stuff that he posts that very much is available. And, you know, it's just, here it is, free. So, first of all, I can't believe that this website is there
mm-hmm.
and that it hasn't been shut down because it just seems to, you know, to be blatantly illegal.
Yeah.
But, and secondly, I just can't believe all the cool music that's there. You know, I mean, yeah. it's like an entire library of music that's all really pretty good, fantastic stuff. Some of it's quite obscure, and so forth. And then finally, I just wonder what motivates somebody, drives someone forward to put it out there? What is it about music anyway that makes people want to share it like that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I guess my thoughts are sort of sidetracked by the ethical issues that seem pretty prominent here.
There are problems.
But, you know, I'm kind of old school in that way.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, as to what would drive somebody, you know, I think that there is a... in anybody who has been moved deeply by music, there is a deep-rooted motivation that sort of quickly develops to try to encourage other people to have that experience. And I think that's true with all forms of art. I mean, you know, anybody who has had an amazing experience with a novel or with a painting or whatnot wants other people to experience that and share that. Or maybe they do, maybe they don't, but a lot of people do, and that's presumably what must move folks like that. I mean, it's to an extent, it's what drives me to do what I do professionally, which is, you know, when I find something that just completely flips my shit, I want other people to have that experience because it's an experience that is sort of replicable to various lesser and greater degrees. And I think, furthermore, you know, because we all have subtly different tastes, part of my motive, for me at least, and I think that a lot of people feel this way as well, is seeing, you know, first of all, can I guess which of my friends are going to, there is a monstrous bug trying to attack me. I'm just going to have to leave this spot now because he just won't leave me alone. Part of the motive is to see if I can sort of guess who's going to be moved by that thing that I've encountered. So, you know, like there's certain music that I would share with my cousin Matt or with my brother or with you that I might not share with the others in that group or whatnot.
Sure, I can see that, but I guess what I'm wondering is what's specifically about music, because you're saying, yeah, all art is like this, and to some extent I see what, yeah, sure. But something seems particularly, it seems particularly to be the case with music, that it moves people and makes them want to share it.
I'm not sure if it's a function of the art form so much as a function of the ease by which it's shared
in the digital realm, or even in the non-digital realm. I disagree because, for example, visual art, the YouTube with the videos, the Flickr and other photo sharing websites, I mean, digital images easy to share. So many old texts that are online, if text is your thing and so forth. But there's something about music, I think, that not, you know, forget about all this digital file sharing and stuff like that. I feel like there's something about music that speaks to people in a different way than some of these other art forms. I often feel these days like I'd like to do nothing more than just sit at home and listen to music all day.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that about, you know, as much as I enjoy reading a good novel. I don't want to, or watching a funny TV show. I don't want to do those things all the time. Yet, Flaubert, I think it was, that said, the only way that existence is tolerable is to lose yourself in literature as in a perpetual orgy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, it seems like music is kind of a perpetual orgy, although it's not literature. It's a literature of a sort.
Yeah.
I don't
necessarily disagree with you, but I think that there is clearly something different about music, the way that it connects to people from different art forms. Because, you know, another way to go at this would be to point out that, you know, you watch a film, and my experience, at least, is that with the exception of maybe three or four films that I've seen, it's never better than the first time you saw it.
Right, and for most films, you just want to see them once, and then you can remember it for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
But
whereas
you want to listen to it again and again,
is
really
quite the
stuff.
Opposite. I mean, you know, the best stuff that I've ever connected to, I was not music that that I connected to on first listen. I shouldn't say it quite like that.
But it got better with time.
I could tell there was something there, but it got better with time. And you know, the best stuff keeps getting better with time for quite some time. And that's not true with film, and I don't think it's true with books either. I don't think I've ever, I don't read a lot of books anyway, so I'm not a good sample on that. But, you know, I'm rarely inclined to read a book more than once. And when I do, it's good, but it's not the same experience.
Yes, there's been very few books that I've wanted to return to again and again, although there have been some. In particular, I think of the Book of the New Sun by Gene Wolfe, probably a book that I've read, I don't know, 10 or 20 times. And it's very long, too, so it's not like a, you know, an unsubstantial undertaking. I've read it backwards and forwards, literally. And I found that the nature of his writing was such that he kind of writes in puzzles. And so you only can solve these puzzles by repeated rereadings. Although there's, you know, there's plenty of stuff to be garnered at first read as well.
Well,
I love how our conversation is being punctuated by bursts of static. That's just classic.
I'm not hearing them anymore, so that might be in your head at this point.
Oh, that could be, yeah. Mm-hmm. That brings up another point, which is the time difference between you and I.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're out there westerly, and so the sun is, you know, coming your way, or by the time that we're having these conversations, it's setting over there, but it's set earlier for me, obviously. So, in other words, I'm an hour ahead of you, so to speak, and therefore I'm also always an hour ahead of you in terms of drinking as well.
Oh, right, exactly.
I don't know if you really have contemplated how that affects our conversations.
Well, I'm certain that it does, but you know, I usually feel like by the end of our conversations, I've probably caught up with you.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to say that in this age of instantaneous communication with emails and text messages and all this shit, it's really quite fascinating and quite heartening to me that that there still is one person on this planet that. Who's hard to get a hold of. And of course, I'm thinking of you. What the
exactly.
hell?
How
is it possible that you are so difficult?
Well, sometimes, I mean, like the recent difficulties have sort of run the gamut. So I believe it was Friday you... you texted me and asked if I wanted to have a nightcap conversation. And I didn't even, somehow I just failed to notice that I had any text messages.
Yes,
until
well,
Saturday morning.
Your phone was out of battery. And the week before that, it was your, oh, my phone, I left my, you know what, I left my phone on vibrate, and I didn't realize it was on vibrate. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's been my nemesis, actually, is that, you know, I put my phone on vibrate. What's that?
I said it's one thing after another with you.
I know.
You're kind of like Christy in that she also has a cell phone in theory, although, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you actually reach her on it at any given time, yeah, it's questionable.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other challenge is sometimes, you know, just the simple challenges of juggling, stuff going on. You know,
you have a life.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and you know, as much as it's, you know, I mean, a lot of times in a lot of relationships, you know, you just pick up the phone and call, and if you don't get on the phone, well, that's fine. But of course, because we're trying to record these conversations, and they tend to last longer,
right.
You know, it's not quite as spontaneous.
Conversation by appointment.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, reminds me, they still have that query out on TalkShoe, Become Famous Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I meant to write them. And
uh-huh.
I've just forgotten around to it. I'm wondering if that's something that you would want to pursue.
Well, you know, theoretically, sure. The challenge this week in particular is going to be time, as seems to be a running theme, just because I've got this week, and then next Saturday we fly off to Austin, Texas to see my whole extended family, and
just
well,
for the hell of it,
quite extended, I would say. What's that?
Your nuclear family, but is that just because just for the hell of it, or is there a special occasion?
Well, it's sort of a, you know, every couple of years we try to do a full Nichol and Heisel gathering. The Heisels are,
cool.
Of course, you know, my mom's sister, her and her husband and two sons, and you know, various folks there. And this is the first time we're doing it in Austin. And so it should be fun. But in the meantime, you know, the other thing that I've taken upon myself, which just keeps getting more and more responsibility involved with it, is this opera company.
Yeah, you got the new web stuff, huh?
Shit ton of things to do before I leave. But, you know, what the hell? Sure.
Well, it's if you wanted to take a pass at it, it's just a matter of, I think, sending an email to an email address saying you're interested.
You haven't already sent them anything then, right?
No, I haven't, unfortunately.
Okay.
Meaningful. But, anyway, we're using their system. We're recording.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing exactly what they are looking for people to do, strangely
yeah.
enough. And I don't know where they're at with that now. Probably nowhere or nothing has happened. But maybe they've decided, you know, forget about it. Who knows? We could just ask.
Yeah.
Do you ever get a haircut at home?
Get a haircut at home?
Yeah.
Is that like drug code or something?
No, I was, you know, in these tight economic times, I figured that it was possible that you had conscripted your lovely wife, Dylan, to give you, you know, a haircut.
Oh, yeah. I haven't had anybody else besides either myself or Dalen cut my hair in probably 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she didn't
ever
have any
reticence?
I
shaved my head. What's that?
Oh, are you just keeping your shave bald?
No. I'm terrible about keeping any sense of consistency to it. So usually I would say that I keep my hair between the cut and maybe 3/4 of an inch before I finally get sick of it and realize, okay, I got to cut my hair again.
You keep it well under one inch.
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem is that when I, ever since the very first time that I shaved my head, one of the kind of unexpected things that I've encountered is that now even when I try to let my hair grow out a little bit, it won't lay down at all. I mean, I think it got as long as probably an inch or more at one point, and it all just stuck out straight from my head as if I had been, you know, electrocuted.
Yes, well, no, that's
and,
what short hair should do.
Well, yeah, except it's not short anymore at that point, but for some reason it continues to want to stick straight out. So
then your definition is short, but I kind of like this hair standing straight up look.
Yeah, well, it has its place, but not on the head of somebody who's balding. Has been my conclusion every time.
Well,
you know, I had really long hair, the longest hair of my life, right before I shaved it the first time, and the realization and the reason for shaving it was that I was balding, and long hair looks idiotic on somebody who has no hair on top. So.
Yeah, I know.
Ever since then, yeah.
Well, I haven't been able to get Christy to cut my hair for the longest time.
Really?
She did once upon a time back when we were first going out. We
mm-hmm.
would do this thing called slip, clip, and skate, where she would put on a slip and
mm-hmm.
skates and get me electric
mm-hmm.
clippers, and she would literally skate around me. And shave my head.
Nice.
Yeah, that was.
And you can't get her
crazy.
To do that anymore.
No, for one thing, she doesn't have the skates, but for another thing, she's just always worried that she's going to mess up, you know, my hair. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
I did finally get her this weekend to, you know, I had shaved my head bald. When was that? The fall equinox or the spring equinox, I guess. And
mm-hmm.
I've just let it grow out since then, and it's gotten to the point now where, of course, it's growing equally from all sides of my head, right? So it's just like a sphere expanding, like the universe
yeah.
expanding.
Yeah. Right.
So I kind of want just a fade on the sides and the back.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing off the top. So very simple, right? With the proper plastic guards that you put on, you know, clip on guards that
mm-hmm.
you put on the clipper, it should be pretty easy to do. And it took a couple evenings, but I think we finally got there.
Right on. Wow, so you've entered like a new era of hair styling.
Yes, and a new level of intimacy in our relationship.
Right, exactly.
Even after all these years, you know, we've been married 15 and a half years, I think it is.
Wow.
So there's that, and I just thought I would mention that. Is there anything on your mind?
Well, you know, not a lot. I'm a little bit sort of baked, so to speak. Unfortunately, you know, like back when I was in the mid-90s, if I were to tell you that I was baked, it was because I was stoned. Right now,
okay.
I'm literally sun-baked because we spent yesterday out on the river in the raft. We took Julian on his first river float in a boat.
What river?
The Clark Fork River, which is the river that flows right through downtown Missoula.
Right, right. So when you guys say the river, there's really no question.
Well, there is actually. There's several rivers that feed into this valley, only one of which comes out of this valley. But we technically, I guess, we're even for a mere moment in the on the Bitterroot River, because we started on the Clark Fork and then came down to where it came together with the Bitterroot, and I rode over into the flow of the Bitterroot just to gaze and wonder at the different color of the water. And then, of course, the two just blended together into one murky color. Anyway, so that's a long answer to a simple question.
No, not at all. That was a beautiful picture. It sounds lovely.
Yeah, it was fun, and Julian had a great time. We took just a stick that we found on the side of the river and a piece of kitchen twine that, you know, like you would use to tie up a turkey, and tied a bobber on the end of that. Because, you know, he's kind of aware of what fishing is all about. He's never really gone fishing with me, except when he was, like, 4 weeks old at one point. But he's aware of what it was, so we decided that we would give him a little fishing pole. So he was very excited about the bobber in the river and kept calling to the fish to come eat the bobber. And that was fun and hysterical for a few minutes, and then he lost interest. But, you know, there was always on the river, there's something to occupy the attention even of a 2-year-old. So, you know, there were osprey and a couple of bald eagles flying overhead, and, you know, he's really into birds. And anything flying, really. And, let's see, there were some power boats that were going up and down the river, just two of them, fortunately, but two is almost too many. But he was pretty excited about those because they were very loud. And actually, all since then, all he talks about is the loud boat, or the noisy boat is what he calls it.
Yeah, that sounds like a very typical boy kind of thing. Let me ask you this. Is he fascinated by trucks and, you know, dump trucks and fire trucks and all those kind of things?
Yeah, totally. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of distinct words for different types of them, but he's really into them. You know, helicopters he's all about, airplanes. He particularly likes things that fly overhead.
So I went to a neighbor's 3-year-old birthday party, and for the longest time, the birthday boy was nowhere in sight, and a bunch of the other kids were also missing in action because they were all up in his bedroom playing with fire trucks. And they weren't. It was a beautiful day. It had rained, and the sun was now coming out, and so that had cooled things off a little, and it was just really nice. But the kids were nowhere to be found. They wanted to just play with the trucks upstairs. I'm just wondering how gender specific that is.
It is so weird, man. We have not. I don't feel like we have enforced any kind of sort of gender roles, whether in terms of colors or whatnot. I mean, I'm standing outside right next to a pink scooter and a pink big wheel that a neighbor girl gave to him, and it's like, well, sure, you can play with those. You know, I don't care that they're pink. And yet, you know, the things that he is into are basically, you know, in things with engines, particularly the things that make big, loud noises. So, you know, he loves the train because we can see the train from our house sometimes.
Yeah.
And because we're like a block away from the train yard.
I imagine you can hear that from your house.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of living here, actually, is because we're right near where they reorganize all the boxcars. So periodically, you just hear these thunderous crashes that echo throughout the valley as they, run two boxcars into each other to connect them. So he's really excited about that all the time. And balls. I mean, he is just freaking nuts about balls. Any store that we go into, it's like he's got a radar for them. I won't even see him, and he's wandering off, and, pretty soon he's over at the bin of footballs or whatever.
Sounds about
so
right.
I think he has at least 4 footballs now. We just got another one yesterday. He sleeps with 2 of them.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's very much in line with our friend, the friend I was telling you about at his birthday party. I mean, same thing, but they were just kind of taken aback to see that, wow, boys do like trucks. It's very,
yeah.
very strange.
Yeah.
I guess it's not strange. I guess it's normal. But I suppose I remember as a child, as a young boy, liking trucks too. I also remember liking fireworks because, pretty patterns up in the sky and the loud boom noise.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And now I look back on that and I cannot, for the life of me, because fireworks don't really do anything for me anymore. And I cannot, for the life of me, figure out what the appeal was. But I know as a kid, I loved them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, today we were driving up to Plains, Montana, where Dylan's mom lives, which is about an hour away, and we were driving through a town called Arlee. We kind of came around this curve in the road, and Jules just started yelling. He was so excited about something. I mean, he was so excited that he wasn't really forming words. He was just, I'm the mama, daddy, mommy, daddy, mommy, daddy. And finally starts spitting out something about a ball. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And then he said something about the sky. And sure enough, I look over and there is a water tower, which of course is a ball in the sky. And it's the first time I think he's ever seen a water tower.
Yeah.
And it was just I'm sure it was the highlight of his day to see a ball that big way up in the sky.
That is pretty impressive.
And I guess my point in elaborating on that is that, you wonder why you were excited about fireworks when you were a kid, or, why a kid would be that excited about seeing a ball in the sky. But, it just comes to a point in life where it takes more to be impressed by things. It's kind of the same thing we were talking about drugs and food earlier. Sugar, like if I eat a big bowl of ice cream, I know that what's going to happen is I'm going to feel really satiated for about 45 minutes, and then I'm going to have a splitting headache. So that's my experience of sugar overload these days. But aside from that, the simpler things in life don't necessarily always have that resounding importance.
Right. I can think of a few examples of that, but nothing I would want to share in public.
Right, exactly.
Well, there's one other thing that was on my mind, and I was going to ask you if you'd read any good books lately, but you kind of already answered that.
Yeah. No, I haven't read a book since, I'm not sure what the last one was that I read. I mean, the last The last really great book that I read, I think, was probably The Shipping News, which was quite a while back now. I've started and stopped a few since then. I don't know what it is about me. It's the strangest thing. I'm a writer who just, I don't read. we've had this conversation before, and I always correct myself. I read a ton, but I don't read a lot of books. I read tons of magazine articles and newspapers and whatnot because, you know, I find it more gratifying to see what other people do and what I do, what they do, and how they string words together and et cetera.
But I, on the other hand, have been in a book club now for about 8 years, and it's been one of the most regular, been one of the few things I've really stuck with, you know, for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And very pleasurable thing, too. It's a science fiction book club, and we take turns picking books on a theme. So now, with the level of involvement and so forth that we have, your turn to pick books only comes around maybe every other year.
Oh, wow.
So it is upon me now to choose and lead. Well, you don't really have to lead the discussion, although, you know, it's kind of good form to do so. Three books on a theme. And I've got them, and I just thought you might be interested to know that the theme that I picked was is hard science fiction. And I'm just wondering, given that you're not particularly a huge fan of the genre, if that phrase hard science fiction even has any meaning to you.
No.
Yeah,
I mean, I could pretend, kind of, I could make something up, but I'm sure it would be wrong.
It's like a subgenre distinction. So if I was to say to you that there's a continuum of kind of softness to hardness in the science fiction genre, and that could be at least a couple different ways, from like the soft sciences, so to speak, to the hard sciences. In other words, science fiction that engages in more speculation or comes at it more from the angle of sociology or political speculation and so forth. Kind of like 1984, you know, George Orwell. On the one hand, that'd be the softer end of the spectrum. The hard end of the spectrum, of course, would be stuff like physics and speculation, you know, more like the Stephen Hawking kind of stuff.
Right.
So that's one sense in which people use that term, hard science fiction, to designate a kind of a tendency. But the other thing, the other way, which kind of parallels, but not exactly, the first one, is the idea of how important and how seriously do we take the role of science in the story, so that the harder the science fiction, the harder the fiction, the more important the role of science becomes, and the more of an effort the author makes to try to make their story fall in line with the state of the art of what's known in any particular science that impacts on the story. You see what I'm saying?
So sure.
The very first novel that I picked for these three that we're going to be reading is The Mission of Gravity by Hal Clement, which was written back in the early 50s, I guess. It's about a very large planet out somewhere in some other solar system. Huge planet that has like 3 times our gravity, but it's spinning so fast that at the poles, it has something like 700 times our gravity. Mm-hmm. And the story revolves around some humans who come out here and make contact with the residents, the alien residents of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And as you might imagine from the very title itself, Mission of Gravity, a lot of the story revolves around the extreme gravity on this planet. So it's all very related to, you know, physics, and everything kind of flows, astrophysics, I guess you would say. Everything kind of flows out from there. Well, this author, Hal Clement, is, you know, considered, I mean, definitely a kind of an old school science fiction writer, considered
mm-hmm.
one of one of the exemplars of the hard science fiction style. And he said, you know, once upon a time that writing science fiction is fun because it's like a game. And the idea of the game is very simple. The rules are very simple in this game. The object for the author is to avoid making as few mistakes as possible regarding the science that's involved.
Mm-hmm.
And the object of the game for the reader is to catch as many of those errors as you can. Well, I think that perfectly encapsulates an axis of interest in these stories
mm-hmm.
that people who don't read science fiction, who are kind of, you know, not familiar with the genre, just wouldn't tend to see or even think about in terms of literature, because there, all the other stuff that, you know, plays into literature and storytelling is there as well, you know, plotting and characterization and
mm-hmm.
all these other things. But this element of scientific speculation and so forth can actually become a driving force for narrative. But it, to me, that's the very definition of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always play a role in what we consider science fiction, because there's plenty of stuff that's published under that rubric, under that that category of science fiction. It doesn't really take science very seriously at all. You know,
yeah.
For example, the classic example I like to give is, did we discuss this before, Once Upon a Time?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, the example I like to give is if you had the play Hamlet, and you just set it in the future, and at the end everybody kills each other with ray guns and sort of swords and poison or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That wouldn't really make it science fiction, would it?
I would assume not.
I would assume not, too. I would assume that there's some, that's just, so to speak, surface window dressing. And
mm-hmm.
there's something deeper in the narrative structure, if you will, the orientation of the narrative,
yeah.
that is what defines something as science fiction. But, you know, it's so difficult to define literary genres. But anyway, I do think that there's some kind of deeper issues at work. And to me, the whole question of hard science fiction, I think, is an interesting way of exploring what is science fiction, what is the genre. And
yeah.
that's what I hope we will be discussing for the next 3 months.
That's great. Have you heard M.C. Hawking?
M.C. Hawking?
Mm-hmm.
Like Stephen Hawking, but M.C. Hawking?
Yeah.
That is not really ringing a bell.
Oh, my God. I just don't even know how to express how important it is that you go find this album by M.C. Hawking, because it's...
Well, I certainly will, because, you know, I've got to tell you that besides my interest in the literature of science fiction and my
mm-hmm.
abiding interest in music, my burgeoning interest, I should say, in music,
mm-hmm.
Excuse me, because I feel like I've only come to music lately in life. That's how I feel.
Uh-huh.
I'm particularly interested in science fiction music, if you will.
Yeah, well, this is you've clearly missed one of the defining albums of the genre, because this is Stephen Hawking's rap album.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard it.
Yeah, well, you need to. It's mighty fine. As a matter of fact, I'm quite certain that you can find some of it on YouTube. I would recommend looking for E equals MC Hawking.
I have ways of finding music. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just make sure you pay for it, Buster. Because, you know, those musicians, they have to make a living.
I'm always happy to pay for music when it comes to highly recommended.
Yeah.
Although some of the most interesting music isn't available at any price.
Exactly.
And,
that's the irony.
Yeah, and some of the most interesting music is just being given away free.
Yeah.
But I used to, you know, you remember back when we were growing up, we would make mixtapes and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Give mixtapes to a friend or a lover or someone that was a friend that you wanted to be a lover or something like that. And
right.
The whole time that we were doing that, I thought it was legal. I really
mm-hmm.
thought that it was okay. Is it not legal?
Well, I once again would have to speculate. I don't think that it's legal because you're giving away something that someone has put out there with the intent that it should be purchased. I tend to fall on the you know, in this vast gray area that exists right now with media, I tend to fall on the side of believing that you know, a mixtape of individual songs, you know, one song per artist, you know, times 15 equals a pretty decent mixtape,
sure.
mix CD. And I tend to think that that's actually, I don't have a moral problem with doing that, because I think that more often than not, it's a good thing for the artist. And, you know, I'm the best example of that. The thing that the CD that singularly revived my interest in music, really, because I felt like I'd really gotten into a rut and was not finding anything that interested me. My brother gave me a mixed CD for Christmas back in around 98 or so. That was a bunch of, it was a bunch of different stuff, so it'd be hard to categorize what it was. But I would say that, well, you know, there was a Radiohead song on there, for example, which I had not heard them before. I had heard of them. But this was toward the end of my period of being exclusively obsessed with classical music. So, you know, there was a lot of music that I'd heard of but hadn't heard. And a bunch of those artists that were on that album, you know, I've gone on to collect pretty much everything that they ever recorded and purchased it. So, you know, that mixed CD that my brother made ultimately sold a whole bunch of albums.
sure.
So, yeah, that's my long-winded answer to that.
So you're addressing not the legal question, but the important moral.
The ethical question. Yeah.
Yes, that's fantastic. But what I was really wondering about is it legal? Your brother giving you that tape, was that legal?
No, I don't think it is.
You know, I always thought it was. It's just, that's amazing to me. But I think you're right. I think technically speaking, it's not legal. I also thought that if you went to the library and checked out some albums and recorded the songs that you liked onto a tape, whatever, you know, like, I thought that was legal too.
Yeah.
Apparently not.
No, I mean, you know, for a long time I assumed that it was a commercial standard that, you know, it was illegal to sell
music. As long
as you weren't
selling it. As long as you're not selling
yeah.
it. Yeah, exactly.
But all the busts of people trading files over, you know, first Napster and then subsequently all the different other trading services demonstrates, you know, those people weren't selling access to those albums. They were simply putting them out there for anybody to download.
Well, yeah, and you make a good point there, a good distinction. As far as I know, all of those cases have been against people who were sharing songs, they weren't downloading songs from other people. They were offering
mm-hmm.
songs up to others.
Right,
and,
exactly.
That, I think, is a key question. Then, for example, if you go to the Zamboni website that we were talking about earlier, and you
mm-hmm.
download all these albums, some of which are commercially available right now, you know, I mean, hot stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it's clearly illegal, but are you breaking the law by downloading it?
Well, I mean, I think that's the same thing that you run into in drug policy. You know, it is illegal to buy and smoke marijuana, but because there's so many people who do this, law enforcement has taken the attitude that they should go after the suppliers.
And yet our jails are
still doesn't work. But yeah,
still
exactly.
Does. Well, these are things to ponder.
Exactly. And there are other things to ponder, but at this point I think we've just about exhausted an evening.
Yeah, we certainly haven't exhausted the topics because we could talk about these things all day. I just saw on the news, for example, that the Pirate Bay in Sweden lost their case. They lost their case, and I guess they're going to appeal it, but they were sentenced to time in prison and, I don't know, $3 or $4 million of fines, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And these are the guys who run the biggest torrent tracking site on the Internet.
Yeah.
Which
they're not even giving you anything. They're just telling you where to find it.
Yeah. And their whole deal... The whole Pirate Bay deal actually spawned a political party in Sweden, the Pirate Party, which did not really do too well in the last election. But still, mere fact that happened is kind of a testimony to the issues at stake and how fundamental they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know.
I'm not sure I do know.
Well, I have this feeling that until software providers, and I use that term in its loosest sense, so, you know, music creators and book authors and whatnot, until they can really embrace, and until there's a whole cultural shift to where it makes sense to embrace a more open sliding scale, pay what you can kind of approach, you know, we're going to continue having these issues. And I suppose we'll even, I don't know, I could be wrong, but there's a naive part of me that believes that, I don't think that Radiohead did too shabby with their pay what you want to release of In Rainbows. And I even suspect that somebody like Girl Talk, who doesn't have the benefit of prior mass market success, I suspect that he isn't doing too shabby with his pay what you will releases. So I could be wrong, but I think that that kind of a model makes more sense. Because, you know, there are things that I'd be glad to pay for in, you know, sort of retroactively. And I have in some instances. You know, there have been albums that I've been so stoked about. Actually, OK Computer was probably the first one that I got a full free, you know, digital copy from a friend, and I liked it so much that I felt the need to add it to my permanent library in its real form, so I purchased it.
Fantastic. Well, and I think that might be a good note on which to conclude this little conversation of ours.
Yeah.
Are you back in the house?
No, I'm still outside.
Still outside?
I might just sleep out here.
By big bugs or anything like that around there?
No, I'm sort of avoiding them. You know, it's not a biting bug season. You know, it's not a lot flying around yet. It's more just that, like, all the beetles have come out from underneath their rocks because they can.
Yeah, and of course we're besieged here by mosquitoes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But you'll get those later.
Yeah.
I will talk to you later, dude.
Yeah, have a good one. It's good talking to you.